Hello, if you've just joined us, you're watching Stock Watch. My name is Siti Mgabateli. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget to send us your questions. You can send your stock questions through to 33814. That's via SMS or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Right. Gentlemen, Jean-Pierre Fester from Fairtree Capital and Rowan Williams, who is with Nitrogen Fund Managers. Let's get to the markets first today. It looks like we're doing a bit of a waiting game, right? Tomorrow they're calling it Busy Wednesday because there's so much going on in the US and Europe as well. Particularly, we've got the ECB situation, we've got the Brexit situation. Mm-hmm. We're going to start seeing some data and financial results coming out of the US as well this week.
Yeah, it's really been a slow start to the week. We saw the brokers reporting that this Monday was actually the slowest day of the year. So that does give you some indication of sort of the malaise that we're currently in. I think we've got a month till our own national elections. Yeah. The market's got one eye on that, digesting Moody's, and I guess we're following some of these global macro events that you've outlined.
Absolutely, and locally as well, we're watching what growth does. I want to get a sense of from both of you actually, but I'll start with you, JP. A lot of people looking at the growth situation here at home, right? So you have the IMF sort of downgrading what their expectations are for 2019. But the view seems to be that if we get some sort of a boost in consumer or business confidence, we really could turn things around. And it would not need to be a massive boost, but just a turn in how people view things. Would you agree with that?
Well, that's the glass half full view. Yeah. It could be, but it is a view with an optimistic tinge to it. It presupposes we'll have a good election, that the ANC won't need to do, for political reasons, certain things like going to a coalition with parties who are more extreme. It does mean that Cyril Ramaphosa improves his position, and through that we have a cleansing of some of these gangster elements within the ANC, and it becomes better for governance and better, therefore, for business and general consumer confidence. And if we have that, yes. But there's a lot of things that need to happen before we get to the glass half full scenario playing out. So I'm also hopeful that that will happen, but hope isn't an investment strategy on its own. So yes, I do have a few long positions in my portfolio, including Rand hedges and domestic companies, but I also still have a few short positions to make sure that if I am wrong and the glass isn't half full but it's half empty, that I can still protect the value of the portfolio.
Because I get the question about, valuations on particularly a lot of small and medium cap stocks are so low that people are going buying opportunity, but do we need to wait for the catalyst?
Look, I think fortune does favor the brave. I think sort of the consensus scenario and probably the most likely scenario, so higher probability to, I think, a positive outcome from our elections, and leading to these catalysts that JP has outlined actually starting to take place and gain momentum. And I think what you'll see is the market's a voting machine and a discounting machine, so it can quite quickly translate what it sees as positive sentiment into higher valuations. So it does look like an opportune time to look at some of those quality stocks and consider adding them.
Okay, so let's look at some stocks. Some big moves in Richemont today, down 3.8%. Credit Suisse saying that the company shares are overvalued. They downgraded their outlook on them, and they're worried about how much cash Richemont might need to pour into its operations. Your view on Richemont?
Yeah, so it's really in the luxury goods sector, and I think there has been sort of a slowing of demand generally, China and Europe to some extent, and also obviously the change in the channels and how they sell. So it's actually going through quite a lot of change as an industry, as a sector, as a company, and having to face those challenges. They move sort of online into Porter, also slowing down to some extent. So it's quite a difficult environment for them. And if you look at it just on the face of it, to me, it still looks like quite an expensive stock, given those what I see are sort of longer term challenges. So I would tend to agree with what the brokers are saying.
Agree?
Yes, look, they always had a large cash pile, and then they spent it on buying out the minorities of Hugues Net-a-Porter. So that took up a lot of their cash, and then also still buying back a lot of the watches from what you call the retail channel from some of the stores that were sitting with all this stock and it just didn't move. So instead of having them cut the prices, which is not good for those who had bought watches before, they'd rather buy it back and even destroy the watches, which doesn't make sense. It only makes sense in the luxury goods industry to destroy your product to keep your pricing points. But because of that, it means that the cash flow profile of Richemont today is very different to a year ago in the last 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
So it is a concern, but if they can get to the end of these buybacks soon, they should have enough cash and it shouldn't be a problem. And, you know, they don't call the executive chairman Rupert the Bear for nothing. He makes sure that the downside is covered because he is normally so very
How solid is that China market? Because at one point there was the whole bribery scandal about people using watches to bribe officials.
Yes.
And that seemed to be frowned upon. So how
Correct. How
solid is that China market?
Well, with Xi Jinping coming in and having his tigers and flies strategy of looking both at the big guys with corruption and the smaller guys with corruption, that cracked down on gifting, but it still grew in terms of Chinese growth from the normal high-end market, if you want to call it that, not for gifting. So that it took over the slack from gifting. But still, you know, tastes change, and especially if you think about the Chinese consumer, very technological astute. Everything in China is on your cell phone, on Weixin or WeChat as we know it.
Yeah.
And at some point people are going to say, I don't want to wear two watches, my smartphone to do everything and my luxury watch to show that I'm actually rich. I just want to wear one. So I think it'll be interesting that the luxury goods companies either need to get into the smartphone market or the smartphone companies like Apple has done need to come out with premium products, because at the moment it's a bit of tension between those two.
All right, let's look at some questions. Leah wants to know your view, the panel's view on NAMPAC.
Sure. That's been a difficult one. I mean, we have seen the share under significant pressure. They came with a trading update recently, which actually looked fairly reasonable. They indicated the Nigerian operations were doing fairly well.
Okay.
They're still struggling a little bit in Angola. They're obviously exposed to exchange controls and currency controls in those particular markets.
Are they getting money out?
Yes, exactly. And they built up a fairly sizable debt pile in South Africa, so that has been some concern, the sort of health of their balance sheet, although they have been able to repatriate some sums of cash, which has sort of ameliorated that somewhat. But it's been a very difficult operating environment. They're seeing increased competition in South Africa, in Angola, and in Nigeria. They are, I think, as I understand, looking at selling the Nigerian operations as well, which the market didn't seem to like. So what was sort of an African consumer play, and looked like quite a clever way, you know, through packaging to get exposure to it, has actually turned out to, yes, exposure to African economies and all the difficulties that go with that.
Yeah.
And hence the shares are under a lot of pressure at the moment.
Are they night and day with Mondi?
Oh, yes, night and day. So more some glass, but mostly metal.
Okay.
So cans through the Bevcan operation. So not in paper, which is where Mondi operates in terms of paper packaging. And interesting enough, the metals, the Bevcan operation was very strong, but you had one competitor coming into the market in South Africa, call it roughly a year ago. And now we're hearing of a second one coming into the market. So all of a sudden, the strongest part of the South African operations, at least, will see pressure as there's more competition with these beverage can manufacturers seeing more capacity in the market. So with Africa under pressure and more pressure on the South African operations going forward, Bevcam specifically, and not quite concluding the glass disposal yet, they say it's imminent, there are a lot of worries. But it shows how fickle the market is. The moment they sort of the balance sheet and can prove they can extract cash from the rest of the African operations, then the market focuses on South Africa.
Certainly.
Again.
Panel's outlook on Jubilee Metals.
Oh, no idea. Well, no, I would say that Jubilee, it depends on the platinum price. Platinum and palladium also, platinum has gone through the roof.
Yes, and we've seen what platinum has done.
Correct. So for me, even having the question on Jubilee is interesting. So we haven't had a question on Jubilee as far as I know for 5 or 6 years. So when you get a question on Jubilee, you know that the retail market at least has taken notice of what has happened to platinum and palladium.
Yeah.
And normally that's not a good indication of continuing rising prices, because now when even the retail market hear about it and want to get involved and ask about the more marginal producers and the speculative shares, it tells you that there might be some froth in the market.
And it's interesting because even with the bigger players in the resources spectrum, someone was saying to me, you know, they wish they'd bought 4 years ago when everyone was saying, let's get out because of what it's done. Now people are starting to ask questions about getting back into the resources play, but maybe it's too late now because the prices have run.
Yeah, it's certainly been the best performing sector over the last 3 years. So if you look at all the numbers coming out, and actually the returns have been actually excellent. So if you did sort of hold the faith, I think late 2015, they were really depressed. We were seeing sort of elements of financial stress in terms of at least concerns around that, in terms of balance sheets and gearing.
Yeah.
They've turned into much better businesses today. These large resources groups,
they've paid down debt.
That's right. Much better capital discipline. They've stopped splurging on projects and also pricey acquisitions, and much more focused on managing their capital, managing their projects, getting maximum price, maximum efficiencies, share buybacks, healthy dividend flows. So, but again, yeah, maybe it does feel that has played itself out in terms of an investment case, and they're pretty fully priced right now.
Yeah, but strike action here at home continuing to affect. We saw the update from Sibanye-Stillwater today, and that share price today down over 1%.
And just after 5, they announced the 1.8 billion rand share issue. So it tells you, if the company themselves think our share is priced not to be buying back shares, but to be selling more shares into the market, it tells you something about valuations.
All right. Let's have a look at more questions. Here's one. Are the big diversified, and I want to stay with miners, are the big diversified miners a buy? And if so, which one? So we're diving back into...
I'm the wrong person to ask because
you don't like them.
I'm perennially bearish commodity companies. And obviously that means the last 3 years have been difficult as they've done very well.
Yeah.
But I just feel over the long term they don't have pricing power. They have a cost base that ticks up every year by at least inflation. And as long as the underlying commodity price has increased, that's fine. But the moment that stops, they've got a problem. So I don't know when the problem might arrive next, but I can tell you it's going to arrive.
It's going to be soon, right?
Yeah, look, as I said, they are a lot better businesses
than they have been. They were.
Better managed, better focused businesses also. They've been slimming their portfolios to some extent. So, but yes, it's a sort of a leverage play on particular commodity prices, commodity cycles, so pick your basket, something that you like. You need to understand that the supply-demand dynamics, obviously iron ore is sort of the flavor of the moment because of the supply constraints that we've seen as a result of the tailing dams disaster in Brazil and other sort of supply constraints. So, but yeah, it does feel a little bit like taking a view on a commodity which is difficult, understanding the supply-demand dynamics. So I'm also somewhat circumspect. So you have to sort of have that bent. I think a lot of it has played out. We need to see what's going to happen in China and with the sort of trade war talks. They do look like it's an equitable or positive resolution. And I think on that basis, they could have a little bit further to run, but it's sort of a later point in the cycle, in my view.
All right, we're going to pick up on that. There's lots of questions, one on Aspen, one on Telkom as well. Time for a quick break. Keep sending through your questions via SMS to 41392. You can also email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Stay with us. Welcome back. Let's take a quick look at international markets at this point. And their negative tone taking place over on Wall Street. There's some key events expected, particularly tomorrow in the U.S. The Fed will release the minutes of its latest meeting. Some focus tomorrow as well. Well, the rest of this week really on U.S. corporate earnings. A number of major U.S. financial institutions also reporting on Friday. So the market will be waiting for that. Let's have a look at what's happening in Europe. There's also some wait and see going on there, some particularly key announcements. We're waiting for the ECB's policy announcement, and that's due tomorrow. And EU leaders also set to meet on Wednesday to consider a request by UK Prime Minister Theresa May to delay Brexit until June 30th. She struggles to find consensus with her MPs. And still with me in studio, Jean-Pierre Fester from Fairtree Capital and Rowan Williams from Nitrogen Fund Managers. I'm done with Brexit. I don't care anymore. if they exit or if they stay or if it's a hard or a soft, whatever, right? Make a decision. Because this overhang is having massive, impacts around the world.
Yeah. I mean, imagine a UK businessman having to plan and continuously plan.
Exactly.
And now you hear they've been stocking up and some of the stock it doesn't last and it's going to waste. And so this is a cost. These are real costs to the economy, to businesses, in terms of just the impasse, the uncertainty about when, where, how, what.
What is it?
And this shows you when you put politicians in charge of sort of something so important, what can happen?
Look, we know this from personal experience. We could have told them not to do this. All right, let's get back to some of the questions that have come through. Here's one from Yanni who says, Kumba, once Raleigh comes into production, surely iron ore will come down drastically. Should I short Kumba?
Yeah, just remember the idea is that it'll take so long because you don't just start up an iron ore mine by flipping a switch. It takes a number of years to fix tailing dams and get environmental approval again and start exporting again. So because there's a persistency of apparent deficit in the iron ore market, that's why the iron ore price is so high. So once again, yes, I'm sure at some point, just like we have a deficit now, there will be a surplus and the price will need to move probably downwards to compensate for that. But you don't know when it is. Could be in a year, could be in 3 years. And that's just the nature of commodity companies. So you must just know when you get into commodity companies, there's a lot of uncertainty. You need to do a lot of work regarding supply and demand dynamics. You need to look which are the new entrants, who are exiting, what are the bottlenecks. And for me, it's a very specialized area in the market relative to other companies that have got pricing power, have got moats. And you think about more strategy of a company relative to its competitors, which is more what I spend my time thinking about.
All right. Here's a question on resources still. Someone says, how is it possible that our so-called rand hedge market goes up if the rand strengthens? Something does not make sense. Is it an emerging market fund buying?
Yeah, so it is an interesting interplay of different dynamics. And I guess what you're seeing is, I think, emerging market sentiment, improved emerging market sentiment. So I guess that's a risk-on type of sentiment which does drive the rand slightly stronger. But at the same time, what you're seeing is the potential for a better economic outcome or growth in China, for example, and that's spreading to other emerging markets, which drives demand for commodities. So the sort of gains on the commodity price increases more than offsets the negative from the strengthening rand, and hence you still see those stocks moving upwards. So we have seen that this month, and I guess to some extent a stronger rand and better resource stock prices, which it's quite a nice situation to have if you're an investor.
All right, here's another one. Telkom, big downgrades from by brokers on Telkom, but stock shows some strength. What am I missing?
Well, I think it shows that brokers aren't the only participants in a market. They don't drive prices on their own. So sometimes an upgrade or downgrade from a recommendation of a broker doesn't necessarily mean that the stock price will move as the broker recommends and or foresees. And in this case, there's been a lot of noise in the market, or let's say just general information that it sounds like Telkom Media, or Telkom Mobile rather, is doing very well recently, and therefore there's an expectation, there has been expectation building up that when the Telkom results are released, it'll be very strong because of Telkom Mobile. So at some point that expectation gets discounted in the price, as Rowan earlier said, that's what markets are for, they're discounting mechanisms. And then the positivity is in the price, and then probably the next thing that will happen might be negative, and the markets need to discount that, and the price will drop again. So at this point in time, I think Telkom is being priced for a positive outcome, specifically regarding Telkom Mobile.
Yeah.
So if there's any disappointment in that regard, you could see the share price move lower.
Can you give the panel give their view on Aspen, please?
Aspen. We were just sort of having a brief chat about it. So that's been a market darling that we've seen some severe price movements, down 50% in sort of a matter of days.
Yeah.
The latest set of results indicating quite considerable financial stress, and obviously now the delay of the sale of the infant milk formula business to Lactalis, I think indicates the importance of that deal in terms of shoring up the balance sheet, and hence the weight that the market's putting on it. The most recent news has been that it's imminent, that came through on the wires, and we saw the share move up about 8-10%, but subsequently has come back quite a bit. So it's quite a speculative share at the moment. Looked at the balance sheet, we're quite concerned about the health of their financials. Even after the sale of this business, it's going to be a long road ahead of them. If they don't see growth in their cash flows, it's going to be a very tight situation for that company.
All right, we need to get to stock picks in a second, but very quickly from Anthony says, one more question. Is SAP management system not paralyzing ShopRite's business model that they started using recently?
Well, they would say it was a positive, and they can use the moving average stock valuation method rather than first in, first out, and they can drill down to a specific product in a specific store and see what the sales are and what the GP margin is. So according to management themselves, the SAP system has helped them. Sure, it came at a large cost, and there was some issues with integration, and there were also some issues at the DC, specifically the Centurion DC at the same time.
Yeah.
But it sounds like if they get over this, and we'll see this in the next set of results, that the SAP system, according to management, was a positive.
All right, let's get to your stock picks. I'll start with Ira.
We're going to go with CAP, which recently did a book build out of Steinhoff. So I think to some extent they've got the monkey off their back. Because they are totally sort of free of Steinhoff shareholding. That overhang that the market was waiting for has now washed through the market.
Yeah.
We've seen some big players take big positions, particularly Alan Gray and PIC, which are major shareholders in the company. They've got very strong market positions in their core markets in terms of PG Bison and the chemicals business and the automotive manufacturing business. So that all looks very positive.
Yeah.
We were talking earlier about these smaller cap stocks that are priced for an improvement in sentiment, and I think CAP is certainly one of those. As the economy improves, they're quite reliant on a healthier economy. The business certainly will do better, and I think it is priced to move upwards.
What sort of valuation are they sitting at the moment?
Yeah, so it's around 7.30 at the moment. The book build was at 6.85, so it hasn't recovered that much. It was down 10% on the book build, roughly. So there is still some sort of discount in the price. I think you could see a target price a year, 18 months out, of around 9 rand, possibly.
Okay, so there you go. You've got a stock that's kind of ready for that momentum from the local economy. Your stock back.
So going for a global share, an offshore share, as usual, Fiat Chrysler Automobiles is listed in the US and in Italy.
Okay.
It had a long-standing CEO who passed away, unfortunately, last year, but the new management team that has taken over have shown that they are well in control and still making good strategic decisions. It's got a good cost base relative to the volume that Fiat and Chrysler are pushing through in terms of their production facilities, and they get positive operating leverage from that. Global car manufacturers have sold down the last year or two, mostly because of diesel, firstly, but secondly, also slowed down in the sale of motor vehicles in China. Fiat has also got some of those issues, but less so than a lot of other manufacturers. And they unbundled Ferrari 2 or 3 years ago. That did very well. They've got some other bits in the company that could be interesting. And then in terms of emissions, they did a deal with Tesla to share the emission credits in Europe, so that they will pay Tesla a certain amount, and then they can use some of the credits because Tesla vehicles don't have any emissions. So I think Fiat Chrysler are doing all the right moves. They are very well placed, and they are very cheap relative to other car producers.
And what's the state of the global car market? We know what's happening here at the moment, trying to attract as many manufacturers and original equipment makers into our market, but globally, what's...
So there's been a decade of growth, mostly driven by recovery from the global financial crisis, some credits that were given in the US and in Europe, some tax credits, plus then China, which is the big growth driver. But in the last year, a lot of those things have come to a halt.
Yeah.
So diesel sales in Europe are sharply down. It hasn't really picked up from gasoline motors yet.
Okay.
The U.S. has also stagnated post a lot of people bringing forward their purchases because of the tax break. And then China has slowed as well to not showing growth in their motor vehicle sales. But once again, a lot of the shares have discounted this more bearish outlook for motor vehicle sales. And some might say that some of the shares have discounted even more than the more realistic, more bearish outcome that one might expect.
All right. We'll leave it there. Thank you very much to both of you. for your time today. My guests, Jean-Pierre Fester from Fairtree Capital and Rowan Williams from Nitrogen Fund Managers. We take more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. Have a great evening. Bye-bye. Stock back.
So going for a global share and offshore share as usual, Fiat Chrysler Automobiles is listed in the US and in Italy.
Okay.
It had a long-standing CEO who passed away unfortunately last year, but the new management team that has taken over have shown that they are well in control and still making good strategic decisions. It's got a good cost base relative to the volume that Fiat and Chrysler are pushing through in terms of their production facilities, and they get positive operating leverage from that. Global car manufacturers have sold down the last year or two, mostly because of diesel, firstly, but secondly, also slowed down in the sale of motor vehicles in China. Fiat has also got some of those issues, but less so than a lot of other manufacturers. And they unbundled Ferrari 2 or 3 years ago. That did very well. They've got some other bits in the company that could be interesting. And then in terms of emissions, they did a deal with Tesla to share the emission credits in Europe, so that they will pay Tesla a certain amount and then they can use some of the credits because Tesla vehicles don't have any emissions. So I think Fiat Chrysler are doing all the right moves. They are very well placed and they are very cheap relative to other car producers.
And what's the state of the global car market? We know what's happening here at the moment, trying to attract as many manufacturers and original equipment makers into our market. But globally, what's
so there's been a decade of growth, mostly driven by recovery from the global financial crisis, some credits that were given in the US and in Europe, some tax credits, plus then China, which is the big growth driver. But in the last year, a lot of those things have come to a halt.
Yeah.
So diesel sales in Europe are sharply down. It hasn't really picked up from gasoline motors yet.
Okay.
The U.S. has also stagnated post a lot of people bringing forward their purchases because of the tax break. And then China has slowed as well to not showing growth in their motor vehicle sales. But once again, a lot of the shares have discounted this more bearish outlook for motor vehicle sales. And some might say that some of the shares have discounted even more than the more realistic, more bearish outcome that one might expect.
All right. We'll leave it there. Thank you very much to both of you for your time today. My guest, Jean-Pierre Fester from Fairtree Capital and Rowan Williams from Nitrogen Fund Managers. We take more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. Have a great evening. Bye-bye.